What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, on Monday morning, two rival bosses showed up for work at the federal government's top consumer protection agency. Why a nominee of President Trump and an Obama holdover are publicly and messily fighting for control of an agency that Democrats in Washington love and Republicans hate. It's Tuesday, November 28th. Gary, where did the idea for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau first come from?
So Elizabeth Warren, then a law professor at Harvard, wrote a paper in an obscure journal in 2007 saying maybe there should be a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, just like there's a Consumer Product Protection Bureau.
Gary Rivlin has been reporting on the agency since its beginning. And what does this paper that Warren writes from her perch as an academic, what does it actually envision?
There would be an agency for the federal government that looked out for the rights of people in their financial decisions, just like there's a product safety division, an agency that makes sure that our toasters are safe and don't blow up in our kitchen. So her idea is like, hey, for a $20 toaster, we have this agency.
Right.
What about for a $200,000 mortgage that can, you know, really destroy someone's life if it explodes?
And what's happened to home mortgage foreclosures over the last 25 years? They're up 3.5-fold.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's remarkable, particularly because interest rates are low today.
And does anyone in Washington pay particular attention at the time to this paper and to this idea that this Harvard professor has for protecting American consumers from financial products that might hurt them?
You know, I'm sure the think tank folks, but I'm not sure where it would have gone if it wasn't for the financial crisis we had a year later. Suddenly, this idea from a then barely known academic took on a life of its own.
The stock market is now down 21%.
We're now down 43%.
Let's talk about the speed with which we are watching this market deteriorate.
Who knows where this is going to end up? I mean, this is volatility we haven't seen, of course, since way before you and I were born.
Two-year note yields went from 190 to 166 in the blink of an eye.
You know what? Right now, breaking news here, stocks all around the world are tanking because of the crisis on Wall Street.
Suddenly, Congress had to act. Barty Frank from Massachusetts.
This is a continuation of the markup that began yesterday on 3126. I will ask everybody to take a seat.
He was the chair then of the House Financial Services Committee. He takes Elizabeth Warren's idea for this Consumer Financial Protection Commission and puts it into his version of Dodd-Frank, which is this sprawling, multifaceted legislation that looks at derivatives and mortgages and just this omnibus thing that includes everything. And, you know, one section of it was the Consumer Financial Protection Commission.
But this is the central issue. The question is, do you continue consumer protection as it has been? That is consumer protection to be left in the hands of agencies for whom it has been and will continue to be a secondary concern at best?
That would do more or less what Elizabeth Warren, professor, laid out in her paper.
It's kind of an obscure academic's fantasy that an academic paper like this could become so real so fast.
I've had that same thought. I mean, how many of these papers are written?
Right.
You know, it's called Democracy. I mean, I've never even heard of this journal. How many papers are written that are perfectly valid ideas and maybe even great ideas that just sit on a shelf? But,
right,
you know, sometimes it's timing, right? I mean, she wrote it a year before the financial crisis.
The consumer agency that we propose would have consumer protection as its major concern. In fact, its only concern in terms of its enforcement.
And what sort of powers is this new bureau given in the wake of the financial crisis by Congress as it's being created?
I mean, in some ways, it's just remarkable powers. It's a strong single director rather than a five-person commission as it was originally conceived. Elizabeth Warren, professor, talked about a commission, a five-person commission that would have to debate every big decision, and sometimes there are vacancies and sometimes there are splits. Instead, this idea that you have a single director that could act as he or she sees fit means everything to the CFPB.
So beyond the financial crisis, what are the political circumstances that allowed the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to actually get created and have the power that it has?
It was this incredible moment where there was a popular new president in the White House. The Democrats ran the House. The Democrats had 59 votes. They had a Senate, nearly a supermajority in the Senate. And there was just this window. They were about to lose it in a few months, we now know. And there was this just magic moment where something like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau could possibly pass because everything was lined up. Not that it wasn't a huge fight. Mm-hmm. And in the end, it was a 60-38 vote. You had one Democrat, Russ Feingold, voting against it, and you had three Republicans, Scott Brown, Olympia Snowe, and Susan Collins, voting for it.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will be a watchdog for the American consumer.
But, you know, 60-38 went right down to the wire, like these things tend to go.
I'm proud that we got this done, and I'm equally proud that Elizabeth Warren will be helping to make her original vision a reality. So we are extremely proud of you, Elizabeth. Good luck.
It was presumed at that point that Obama was going to name Elizabeth Warren the first commissioner as her baby. Mm-hmm. She was there creating it, so naturally she should become the first director. But
here on Wall Street, the woman who is likely to lead America's new consumer protection agency is highly unpopular.
Once it was decided that Elizabeth Warren was too hot to handle, she was just too controversial, Barack Obama, around a year after the creation of the CFPB, names Richard Cordray as the director.
I should also point out that he took this job, which meant being away from his wife and 12-year-old twins back in Ohio, because he believed so deeply in the mission of the Bureau.
So once this agency is operational and has a leader, what does the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually do?
So I think the big banking interests thought that the CFPB was going to take on the petty lenders and debt collectors and all the fringe players that most of us could agree are abusing consumers with the interest rates they're charging, the terms they're putting on their deals. But, you know, within a couple of years, they started taking on the biggest banks.
Now, the New York Times reports U.S. regulators, including the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, are set to fine J.P. Morgan $80 million as soon as next month.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau fined Wells Fargo $185 million in September.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is ordering Citi to pay a total of $770 million.
In fact, between 2011 and the end of 2016, the CFPB has returned nearly $12 billion to 29 million consumers.
So obviously, in the most black and white terms, this agency is pro-consumer and perhaps anti-business. From the beginning, are most Republicans adamantly opposed to this agency? Or is the moment after the financial crisis one where both Democrats and Republicans agree that this sort of remedy is necessary?
The outrage from Senate Republicans was instantaneous.
Republicans from the start opposed the CFPB.
Conservatives say the CFPB is BFB, bad for business.
Republicans took over the House in 2011. And so the House Financial Services went from Democrat to Republican. Mm-hmm. And all told, from 2011 to today, there have been 134 bills aimed at killing or weakening the CFPB.
Wow.
It is a good day on the floor of the House. We will take up and pass the Choice Act, which repeals the Dodd-Frank, which takes the CFPB.
The House bill that tackles a key issue that I've been sounding the alarm about since my first day in Congress, ending the reckless overreach of Elizabeth Warren's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
The CFPB's concentration of enormous executive power in a single, unaccountable, unchecked director not only departs from settled historical practice, but also poses a far greater risk to arbitrary decision-making and abuse of power.
By my math, given what you just said, under Republican control, the House has tried to get rid of this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau more times than it's tried to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
I mean, really is amazing. I mean, to me, the fight over Dodd-Frank and the CFPB in particular would be the Affordable Health Care Act if there wasn't an Affordable Health Care Act. The executives at the CFPB, Richard Cordray and other top executives, have been called to Capitol Hill more than 60 times.
Richard Cordray, the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau,
defended the agency's mission.
Testified yesterday on Capitol Hill.
Responded to lawmakers Tuesday.
Now, you're testified regularly before Congress, and I appreciate that.
I believe
that,
he needs no further introduction.
Mr. Cordray, welcome again to the committee. You've seen this before here.
So that starts to bring us to today. What happens when power shifts in Washington and the Republicans take power? How does Trump feel about this agency?
Right. So you had candidate Trump running around the country talking about doing a big number on Dodd-Frank.
Dodd-Frank has been a disaster, making it harder for small businesses to get the credit they need. You folks know that.
He didn't speak specifically about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but certainly there was the expectation that the new president was going to take on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, starting with firing Richard Cordray.
Now, Richard Cordray says that his work at the CFPB is consistent with the desires of those blue-collar Trump voters, but White House aides are looking into ways of firing Cordray, and if they don't, Republicans in Congress are going to try to clip his wings through legislation.
Something that's really interesting is that from 2011 to 2016, the fight was against this idea of a strong director.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly you've got Donald Trump in the White House, Republicans in charge of the House and Senate. There was a shift. Some Republicans were saying, hey, wait a second, maybe this idea of a strong single director isn't such a bad idea. Because then we can name our powerful czar, to use their term, in charge of the CFPB. So that was another factor, too. You had this disagreement within the Republican Party. Some saying, let's get rid of the agency altogether. Others saying, hey, wait a second. Let's have a strong single director who's our person rather than the other side's person.
What's the case among Republicans for not getting rid of this bureau altogether? Is it the idea of its public appeal?
Right. So, you know, there's been polling every year about this idea of a consumer financial protection agency in Washington. The latest poll in 2017 showed 78% support for a consumer financial protection agency.
In both parties.
67% of Republicans. Someone else did a poll of Trump voters. Same number. 2 out of 3. I mean, that's something to remember where, you know, I mean, the Trump people are kind of hemmed in. On the one hand, they're very pro-industry. They'd want to be pro-Wall Street. On the other hand, you still have this strain of anti-Wall Street sentiment that the little guy got chewed up in 2008 afterwards because of Wall Street financial shenanigans. And, you know, there really is this sentiment out there that it's hard to take on and delete something called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. I mean, just the name itself. I mean, maybe that was the victory here, that they came up with a name that means like, wait a second, you're going to vote to get rid of a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau?
Right.
And people still remember 2008 and this financial crisis. So, you know, the Trump administration is really between a rock and a hard place. And industry's answer was like, let's take this one on by ducking it. Let's not get rid of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and just weaken it in ways that are very complicated to explain and people won't care about.
There's a reason hedge fund managers, the financial lobbyists, the Wall Street investors are throwing their money all over Hillary Clinton, because they know she will make sure the system stays rigged in their favor.
So it sounds like Republicans and their donors and their allies in the financial services industry may want to do away with this agency altogether. But knowing that their constituents support it, given those polls you just laid out, the best plan may be to keep it with a single person in charge and just put in someone who, from the inside, can contain its power and its focus and be ideologically aligned with the Republican Party.
And perhaps create rules that are industry-friendly. This is a very powerful agency. They could come up with regulations. A CFPB in the hands of someone with a more libertarian, pro-business point of view could come up with rules that are favorable to industry. So it's sort of the forbidden fruit here. Now they have this chance to really take over this agency and remake it.
This morning, we don't know who's running the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. On Friday, President Trump named his budget director, Mick Mulvaney, to take over from Richard Cordray. But Cordray had announced that deputy director, Leandra English, would replace him. Well, she filed a lawsuit last night to block the president's choice. And now a judge may have to break the deadlock.
So that seems like it brings us to right now. We're having this conversation with you, Gary, because of the news over the weekend that employees of this agency weren't sure who was going to show up for work on Monday as their boss. So bring us up to speed on what's going on.
Richard Cordray is stepping down. He hasn't said it this way, but he wants to run for governor of Ohio. And so he's stepping down 8 or so months before the end of his 5-year term. And so from the Trump administration's point of view, it's their opportunity to put in an acting director, Mick Mulvaney, the head of the Office of Management and Budget. Meanwhile, you have Richard Cordray promoting one of his deputies, Leandra English, to the acting director. And the idea from Richard Cordray's point of view, somewhat mischievously, somewhat cleverly, saying like, okay, here's the acting director. The Senate has to approve whoever's the director, and that's going to take months to happen. So Leandra English, in the view of some, is the director of the CFPB. So you've got both of them, they're giving out orders. Whose orders do you listen to? You know, it reminds me of like, you know, the sense of like, after a coup, who's in charge? You know, from the staff's point of view, they have no idea who's in charge, who they're listening to. It's going to have to be decided by the courts. But meanwhile, there's two people and no one has any idea of who's actually in charge, who eventually is going to win this fight.
To this point you have made about putting a strong leader in charge of his agency, what has Trump's choice for the job, Mick Mulvaney, actually said about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau?
Well, he was a member of Congress before he was the head of OMB, and he's been very harsh.
Some of us like to get rid of it because we don't like the idea of there being a non-accountable federal agency, a self-funding federal agency, which is sets a terrible precedent.
In his comments about the CFPB, he's among the Republicans that doesn't think a CFPB should exist.
The place is just, it's a wonderful example of how a bureaucracy will function if it has no accountability to anybody. It turns up being a joke, and that's what the CFPB really has been in a sick, sad kind of way, because you've got an institution that has tremendous authority.
Gary, thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
On Monday morning, staff at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau received two emails, one from Leandra English, the other from Mick Mulvaney, both describing themselves as acting directors of the agency. In his email, Mulvaney said, quote, please disregard any instructions you receive from Ms. English in her presumed capacity as acting director. If you receive additional communications from her today in any form, please inform the general counsel. A lawsuit filed by English to keep Mulvaney from taking over the agency is now in the hands of U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Kelly, a newly confirmed appointee of President Trump. We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today.
We're happy to be with all of you. We had a very interesting meeting with the president.
Emerging from a White House lunch with President Trump on Monday, Orrin Hatch and other Republicans from the Senate Finance Committee said they were confident they would have the votes to pass their tax plan this week.
We intend to turn this mess around, and we intend to do our very, very best to do it in the right way. We've got the right plan to go ahead with, so I'm going to go.
Will the repeal of the individual mandate? Will you get this done by Christmas, Senator?
I hope so.
Republican leadership will spend the next few days in discussion with six or so party members who have expressed concerns with the plan, including its potential to add to the federal deficit and a provision that would eliminate the Affordable Care Act requirement that most Americans have health insurance. And
I just want to say a few words before I get back to work. I know that I've let a lot of people down, people of Minnesota, my colleagues, my staff, my supporters, and everyone who has counted on me to be a champion for women.
Back at the Capitol, for the first time since the allegations against him emerged nearly 2 weeks ago, Senator Al Franken gave no indication that his political career is in peril.
To all of you, I just want to again say I am sorry.
Franken's case has been referred to the Senate Ethics Committee for investigation, a process notorious for its secrecy. But on Monday, Franken said he would be open to making the findings public.
I am going to be accountable. We are going to cooperate completely with the ethics investigation.
That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.